do anything is how you will do everything. And the lessons you learn in jiu-jitsu on the mat teach you to be a better human being off the mat. Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu Mindset. Okay, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Mindset. We appreciate you following us along here on the journey. And so, Professor, here we are for another week, another episode.
Hello, Peter. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. And, last week we had this great leader in the public service world. We had the fire chief, Tom Dwiggins, the fire chief at Chandler, Arizona. And this week we're going to turn our attention to jiu-jitsu and how it's affected the business world. And we're going to introduce a guest here in a little bit. Now, Professor, this podcast, there's no business associated with this podcast now, but you and I know we're working on different things. There may be a t-shirt in our future.
Yeah. Good news hopefully coming soon, right?
We'll get some good news.
Nice.
We're working on different things. There's been some interest in maybe working with us. And although we don't have a sponsorship structure currently, we're certainly talking about that.
We do have, Peter. We're just selecting, right? We have like 1,000 of requests. So I've been trying to select the ones.
Well, we do have friends of the podcast that are maybe not, sponsors per se, but we on Instagram, we want you to follow the Jiu-Jitsu Journal and you'll see one of our coaches, Coach Andrew, gives you some really terrific instruction. And if you're looking for jiu-jitsu tape, Bighorn Athletics, we want you to go check those guys out on Instagram as well. Awesome. And if you're a CrossFit athlete, the tape will work that way as well. But we'll have some news as we go along about that. And so today we have our guest, Marty Herrick. And Marty's been in the business world for a long time, particularly in the world of education finance. And he's has a lot of accomplishments there, but in parallel, he has a lot of accomplishments as a jiu-jitsu athlete as well. And he's 13 years into his jiu-jitsu journey, and he has achieved the rank of black belt. And so before we bring the brown belt. Yeah, soon the brown belt.
Hopefully soon.
Professor, what percentage of students drop out before they even get to the blue belt?
Oh my, that's the biggest percentage rate, right? Like especially, and even after soon you get your blue belt, that's we call like the blue belt curse. Right? Like a lot of people stop to train. He's always a struggling belt. A lot of things happen there, right? You're on that stage trying to figure things out. You are not a threat for the purple belts, for the higher ranks, and sometimes some white belts, pretty athletic, will give you a really hard time, right? But that first year on the white belt and the years after on the blue belt is when usually people have the biggest drop in jiu-jitsu, right?
So Marty, like making it to the brown belt puts you in the tiniest percentage of the jiu-jitsu athletes. So welcome. We're so glad that you're with us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Really glad to be here. Again, Professor Lucas, so nice to meet you. And Pete, I've heard such great things about you. Glad to have this conversation with you.
Terrific. Well, Professor, let me cede the floor to you. What do you want to start with
sure.
Marty here?
Marty, thank you for being here with us. And we usually start talking a lot about jiu-jitsu being for everyone and being such a sport that can connect people, right? And I wanna know a little bit more on like, when did we start to train jiu-jitsu? What was the reason why we start? And also if you have some different background in your martial arts before you start jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, I don't know that I have like a super interesting story about why I joined jiu-jitsu. I might have like a story that is like kind of very cookie cutter about it. my father is Irish. My mother is Vietnamese. So, you know, in the Asian community, martial arts was important for me growing up. I did in junior high, I did like Kung Fu for like 2 years. And I really enjoyed that. But, you know, my father was moving. We were in the military. My father was in the Navy, moved around a lot.
Yeah.
We moved away from Florida, got back to San Diego. I finished out college here. And I found jiu-jitsu because I had, at the age of 26, I had just gone through like a 2 year weight loss journey. I had lost 50 pounds.
Whoa.
I was up to like, I'm 5'6" and I weighed 208 pounds and I dropped all the way down basically to just under 150. And I just ran. Like, I didn't know mm-hmm. anything about fitness. I didn't know anything about like health and like dieting, anything. I just ran it off for like a year and a half. And so I was in this really good shape. I was really, you know, I'd really thinned out, started doing some CrossFit workouts. I met a neighbor who was a retired Navy SEAL and he had fallen out of a helicopter and rehabbed his body doing CrossFit. And so I was like, that's a great endorsement of CrossFit. I'm going to do whatever that guy's doing.
That's awesome.
And through that community, I started meeting people who were telling me, you know, you should be trying jiu-jitsu. Like, jiu-jitsu is incredible. And then the next step was that I started getting really into UFC, and my two favorite fighters at the time were BJ Penn and George St. Pierre. And when you think about mixed martial arts, what always stood out to me was that, you know, this is mixed martial arts, but those guys always came out in their gi with their black belt.
Yeah.
And yes. That always communicated to me this message of like, the thing I'm most proud of all the things that I know how to do, is this black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And so that always communicated to me and resonated with me when I saw these, you know, incredible athletes mm-hmm. that I admired so much. And they, you know, were so proud of their jiu-jitsu lineage. And then I just got lucky. A coworker of mine, his buddy opened a school and was saying, "Hey, Marty, we're going to have a grand opening in 2 weeks. You know, you should come by." I went over there, met the instructor. His name is Andrew Edson. Got his black belt under Paulo Fernando here in San Marcos, mm-hmm. and started training with him. And that was 2009, man. A week before I turned 27 years old, I signed up and haven't looked back. It's been incredible.
So in that beginning, Marty, do you have a story of like what it felt like in that first, you know, as the white belt? Do you remember feeling comfortable, uncomfortable? Like, were you a duck to water with this thing, or did it take you a while to get to it?
Yeah, no, not a duck to water at all. And, you know, one thing that I really like about my story is that I came in and I was like in really good shape, right? I was just like, man, I have cardio for days, you know, like, sure. It's really hard to stop me. And what everybody discovers when they try jiu-jitsu is like, there's nothing like it. Nothing burns you out like jiu-jitsu does, you know? So no, I was not a fish to water, but I was a guy who, you know, and I think I got lumped up a little bit extra because I might've been a little arrogant about, you know, my physical shape that I was in. And so the guys wanted me to know, like, hey buddy, you know, and look, I get a little nervous when I say stuff like that, because 99% of the experience for new people coming in isn't like that. But you know, I probably needed to be, you know, reined in a little bit in terms of what I thought I was getting myself into. But that was good for me, because I'm the type of person who doesn't go into something that I'm terrible at and say, I need to leave. I'm something that I go into something that I'm terrible at, and I'm like, how do I get better? What do I have to do to not be getting choked out, you know, every 15 seconds by everybody?
Right. Right.
How long, Marty, do you think it took it to you to realize that? Because it's funny you saying that you felt that you had a really good shape running, right? Which I guarantee you have. It's just a different type of exercise,
oh,
right?
Oh, man.
So we talked about that a couple episodes ago, how different jiu-jitsu is in the cardio related. But after you start jiu-jitsu and then you keep running, I definitely feel the benefits from it.
Absolutely.
How long do you think it took you for you to realize that, man, whatever I have here on my tank is not, won't be enough? I need to come down, think, and try to learn through the movements.
Well, I think it was like day one when I was just getting manhandled by everybody. You know, I was like, whoa, man, what, it's so shocking how you realize how unprepared you are for a combat experience when you don't have any training in it. You know, you're like, man, I'm vulnerable. You know, you really figure that out. But in terms of the cardio part, you know, I think you figure that out right away. What I think takes a while to figure out is how to manage your breathing and not how to be so tense all the time, and where you can relax, and, you know, if you need to catch a break, you know, where are the safe places that you can go to try to, and there's never really like getting a break. There's just kind of bad into less bad, and like in the less bad place, you can, you know, try to get a few extra breaths in to get yourself straightened out. But once you realize that you don't need to be so stiff and, you know, so tight and wound up all the time while you're rolling. And that probably took me, I don't know, months to figure that out, you know.
That was the learning, right? How to get comfortable in the uncomfortable positions, which is something unbelievable that jiu-jitsu can teach us so often.
So when you think back, I mean, you're in a pretty different phase of your life, right? 26 versus where you're at now. I mean, so you're probably have different attitudes and different perspectives on things. If you were going to give a piece of advice to the 26-year-old Marty who came in kind of like, how hard can this be? You know, I mean, I'm in great shape. What advice would you give to yourself for back then?
I'd probably say pick up a few books sooner than you did. Because once I picked up Marcelo Garcia's X Guard, that changed my jiu-jitsu. I love that book. I picked up Rubber Guard. I think everybody probably picks up that book, but reading that was changing for my game as well. But it took me a while to realize that I should take those steps in my development. So probably pick up some books a little bit sooner. And you know, probably that coming to class every day and prioritizing like being the best in the class is the wrong priority to have. You want to prioritize improving every day. And if you get stuck in and I see this a lot in new guys who try jiu-jitsu, they have a really hard time. Like, I'm a smaller guy. I'm 5'6", you know, I'm 165 pounds, 170 pounds, soaking wet. And you roll with a guy, like just the other night, I rolled with a guy who was like 6'2", 225 pounds. They have a really hard time getting moved around and getting dominated by, you know, a much smaller person. And so I think, you know, pulling that out of my psyche and saying, hey, look, you know, like, you can't let those factors impact you. You know, the long drives home where you're like, what happened today? How did that guy that's like 30 pounds lighter than me choke me out today? I just didn't see that happening. Like, not letting yourself get tied up in that internal dialogue as much as I probably did.
That's nice. And sorry, Peter.
Not at all. Go ahead.
Marty, well, for those that are hearing us and know jiu-jitsu too, have been training, for things that have been saying, for a type of books that you're reading and movements, I can assume that you are a guy player, right?
I used
Being
to
like
be. Yeah,
early
yeah.
X guy from Marcelo Garcia, Rubber Guard, Eddie Bravo.
Well, I very much was in my early development. It's really interesting how your game like evolves over the years. And now, like, one of my goals for myself is to not, what I call myself, play lazy jiu-jitsu anymore. Like, I'll just hang out in the half guard a lot and, you know, let a guy work and let him tire himself out. And then I'll, you know, go after some kind of a sweep and do work from the top. But yeah, my early game was all guard, you know, a lot of triangles, a lot of arm bars, a lot of omoplatas, go-go platas. Those were kind of nasty. you know, all the sweeps that you can get from there. But then at some point I found that I'd like to be smashing and passing. I don't know where and like when that switched on, but something came across and that became my thing.
Nice.
So, I mean, when I'm listening to you, Marty, first of all, it's clear, you know, you have mastery over, you know, where you are at this juncture. Although the, you know, professor likes to say the book's endlessly written in jiu-jitsu, right? So yeah, you can't
totally
catch,
agree with that.
Right? The book's being written faster than you can read the chapters, so to speak. But, you know, when you think about things in terms of a mindset, I mean, what I'm hearing is that as a young man came in, you know, had a certain opinion about, you know, where he was physically. And however, humility must have been baked into who you are, because you wouldn't have, you know, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So you had a humble approach to it, and you had a sense of like flexibility too. I mean, you thought it was going to be one way, and then you had, you know, you adjusted your approach and it became something different. And that, as you just said, seems to have evolved over time, like your perspective hasn't been fixed. And then you had a sense of discipline, obviously, because you approach this not just as a physical activity, but, you know, as an intellectual activity. You're a book reader, and you know, obviously that informed how you moved your body, right? You told your brain, hey, this is something to do. Then you told your body that. And you must have learned to relax, because you're getting gassed early on was probably more a function of like your emotional relationship to that. And so we talk about jiu-jitsu being for everyone. It's because we feel like it develops the person kind of across the board. We are curious about, like, you know, you're a person that obviously develops, and as you develop on the mat, you develop off the mat. Could you begin to talk a little bit about how your jiu-jitsu journey paralleled your business development, because you're a leader in the business community. And we'd like to understand sort of like how those things co-evolved.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when I talk to people about jiu-jitsu, one of my favorite things to talk about is how jiu-jitsu puts you in a place where you're forced to control your internal dialogue. And like a good example of that is I was rolling with a guy the other night. He was on top in my half guard, and he was putting pressure on me that made me feel like my chest was going to explode. Right. And you're in that situation, and you want to just spaz, and you want to panic, and, you know, do something, you know, stick your arm out and do something like that, that gives them the arm bar, but that's what they're looking for. And when you're in those situations, you need to calm that voice down in your mind. You need to, you know, you need to have the willpower to say, no, I'm not going to make those mistakes. Yes, I can barely breathe. Yes, my jaw feels like it's going to be dislocated or something like that, but you're going to be okay. And the great thing about it is anytime you want it to stop, you just tap and it's done. And so you have these controlled stress environments that you get to put yourself in every night that you come to jiu-jitsu, where you get to be as stressed as you want until you want it to stop, and you can say stop. In the professional world, I think that that's been incredibly valuable to me, because we're in high stake negotiations at times. And you can be sitting across the room from the person that you're negotiating with, or in these big presentations, and you'll have this dialogue pop up in your head. You didn't prepare enough, or you didn't, you know, your cards and your notes aren't where they should be. Or, you know, imposter syndrome. I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be giving this presentation like that. And the practice that you get, you know what I mean? The practice that you get in controlling your stress when you do something like jiu-jitsu kicks in those situations. You know how to calm yourself down. You know how to, where to take yourself mentally to make sure that, you know, you maintain the focus that you need to have. And I think that that's been, if over the last 13 years, if I hadn't had that regular practice on that, as I'm someone who kind of lives in a constant state of anxiety, I don't know that I'd have the success that I've had over the last, you know, almost a decade and a half.
Yeah. So that's that, one. That's perfect. And do you have any stories that come to mind? Because that's, I think that's something that that's a theme that the professor and I have been discussing, right? The being comfortable without being uncomfortable, and trying to relax into that. It sounds to me like that theme has been developed in you, and maybe there's a story you have that kind of like speaks to that as an example.
Oh my gosh. where to begin with the amount of stories. I can tell you, this is a longer story, but I can tell you briefly, probably 2017, we signed a huge deal at the company that I was working for. And in an audit of the deal, you know, within weeks of it closing, we found we had missed something. And a very large bank entity was threatening litigation against my company.
Oh my goodness.
And my company was not in any place, you know, we were not in any place to be, you know, facing litigation against an entity like that. And the president of the company would walk down to my office twice a week for 3 months and tell me that I put the company out of business because we didn't catch that. So I'm calling, you know, the company that we did the deal with, you know, I'm talking to the CFO every day and, you know, trying to work it out. And it ended up turning into what it's one of my favorite stories. At some point, you know, I'd like to get into more detail about it in some venue, but I don't know what I could share of it because of NDAs and things like that. But it was something that I thought ended my career. Like, mm-hmm. I thought it was over. I was so stressed out. If I ran my hands through my hair, there'd be hair in my hands because I was so stressed out. That's how bad it was.
Yeah.
But I kept my focus, and the short of it is, I saw an opportunity in that really bad situation, and I knew that if I could just make it past this, I could leverage what I was going through into something even bigger. So we had closed this incredible game-changing deal for our company. It turned into something that could have potentially put us out of business. Once we worked through that and got everything resolved, and it just took, you know, everybody being cool and calm and, you know, no one hitting the panic button or the eject button too soon or anything like that.
Right.
I was able to leverage the relationship that I had developed, you know, that's like wartime,
right,
you know, relationships, mm-hmm, that you develop with the guy that I had negotiated with. You know, it all got resolved. And he ended up signing a deal with us that was probably 2 to 3 times more valuable to our company.
Wow.
than the first one. So we got one, and then we got this even, you know, bigger deal out of it afterwards. And it was all because we stayed cool, and it was all because, you know, no one panicked, and I was telling everybody, just calm down. Trust me, I'm seeing where, you know, things are supposed to be. I understand how this is going to work out. And then I saw the opportunity. You know, you keep your eyes downfield and see, and keep your eyes on the target, and you come up with these great opportunities. It's like, it's kind of like, I think of it this way. The best way I think about it is I get triangled a lot because I don't do a great job of posturing up. and I roll with guys who, you know, have great hips and things like that, but I'm really good at defending triangles. So I'll be in a triangle, and if you're triangle choking a guy, you're pretty confident. You're like, you know, this is going to end. But in those situations, I'm somewhat confident because I'm thinking to myself, I know you're blowing a lot of energy on this. I know that if you don't finish this triangle, which you should, you're going to be mentally discouraged that you didn't catch it on, like you weren't able to finish it on me. And I'm on top. And so once you let this go, I'm going to pass you and you're going to be in a really bad spot. So I just got to make sure I be cool. I think this through. I stick to the nuances that I know are important when I'm in these bad situations. I don't always get out of it, but you know, I'm like probably a 40%, you know, I can get out of it 40% of the time. And I think of it very much like that. So, you know, if you just stay in there, you're going to find an opportunity and it's going to work out for you. So that's definitely one. And then another one that is a shorter story I can think of is my boss at one point had upset an executive from a very important prospective client of ours. And I walked into a meeting with the CFO of that prospective client. And he stands up and he says, I told your boss I would never blanking do business with you guys. Why would I start right now? Right? And I'm sitting there with my entire team in the conference room. And, you know, and we just kept calm and we kept talking. We ended up getting the deal. You know, we ended up signing the deal, even though he felt like
the triangle, you know, had been set,
trying to embarrass us. Yeah, you know, you know. And we just, you know, I wrapped my arm around the leg and tried to find space, and you know, brought my arm and grabbed his collar and started putting pressure, and finally got out of it. Yeah.
That's well, awesome to so
those
hear
are
that.
Those are a couple. Yeah. Yeah. Very, and I think that's my brand. Like if you were to ask people that work with Marty Herrick and say, you know, what are his strengths?
That's interesting. Yeah.
They would, I think that they would say that Marty is good at finding opportunities in bad situations. Marty is good in the tough situations of, you know, like keeping everybody calm and keeping everybody focused and moving forward. Those are Marty's strengths. And I think that comes from jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I hear Marty in the story that, you know, I don't want to, that could easily be overlooked, but I think is critically important, is that I hear humility in the midst of what you're describing to us, because in the deal where your boss is coming down twice a week for 3 months, that's saying, you put us all in the poorhouse, Mario, you ended this thing. You could have, a different person might get defensive, and that defensiveness probably would have cost you that relationship, and you would have
or
never
explosive, right?
Or oh, yeah. Or anger,
that thing,
yeah.
Like give the armbar because that's what they want.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
Right. You didn't. You mean part of your being calm wasn't just looking downfield, but wasn't reacting. I think the professor, that's well put, professor, right? Like you weren't defensive and like, hey, you know what? I'm not the only one here. It's not just my fault, pop, pop, pop. Or you weren't angry, like, hey, look, I don't need to hear that from you. I'm working my butt off, so on and so forth. You were calm, not just in the midst of the circumstance, but also in the midst of the people of the circumstance. And I think, you know, the second story is the same kind of dynamic, that you could have been, hey, look, don't talk like, you know, what's the, why would you, there's a whole bunch of choices you have that kind of speak to confrontation. And instead that sort of humility of, and listen, I'm the beginner of the three of us. I'm at the very beginning of my jiu-jitsu journey, but I understand, you know, it's has the gentle art is in the conversation somewhere. And I'm amazed when I see you talk about being, you know, 170 pounds and moving someone 50 pounds heavier than you. That's not because you had a brute force relationship to that person, but there were things that you found in that dynamic that were subtle, that were about, you know, small movements, not, you know, you didn't pick them up and throw them across the room, I'm assuming. And so, you know, having the right technique for the right situation, you know, is what is the difference between winning and losing, I believe, in the jiu-jitsu game. However, in most business interactions, being prepared, having the right attitude, you know, those things are critical. You know, Professor, what would you say about that?
First of all, it's two awesome stories. I like a lot the way how you were able to associate things that happened with your jiu-jitsu. And Marty, the Gracie family, they say a lot about jiu-jitsu being good to balance, right? If you were, especially, like, let's talk about everyone, of course, but if you were pretty aggressive, jiu-jitsu is going to help you to calm down a little bit. If you were really shy and everything else, right, jiu-jitsu is going to help you to give a confidence to do all things. And everything that you've been saying, it seems somewhat like really relax and think really well before act, try to capitalize in whatever space and opportunity that you have. I just want to ask if it was, do you believe you were always like that, or it was something that you were able to learn a little more through jiu-jitsu and your teammates and everything else?
Yeah, I think I really do attribute it to jiu-jitsu because I think as you progress through jiu-jitsu, you just become more of a problem solver, a constant problem solver. Mm-hmm. And it's when you get somebody, you know, when you're rolling with somebody, when you get them to feel sorry for themselves, like you swept them or you passed them, and they take that moment of saying, you know, like, darn, how did I, you know, I shouldn't have moved my leg there, or I should have kept the underhook or something like that.
Yeah.
While they're thinking about that, you're going to the next, you know, you're stepping over the head and dropping into the armbar. And that's what you, like, you've got to learn to let the mistake go and focus on what's in front of you right now.
Yeah, right.
Like, you can't have a long memory in jiu-jitsu, because that's when you're going to get armbar. That's when you're going to get triangle. That's when you're going to get the submissions thrown on you while you're not focused on what's happening right now. So I really do attribute honing that. If that was there before, I'm not quite sure. I think I might have been too young of a professional to really understand that about myself, but it's really been honed as a practitioner of jiu-jitsu.
Nice. Learning how to prioritize what you have in front of you, right? What should they focus right now? Because when you are in a sparring, someone takes your back, have hooks and choking you, right? Why are you going to be fighting with the hooks if you need to defend your neck first, right? So you need to understand which one is the most important at that time and keep working towards the end goal, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, Marty, you're such a small percentage of people, right, who have persisted as long as you have. And I admire that. I'm going to follow in your footsteps. I'm just much older than you. So by the time I'm 13 years in, I just saw some Instagram post about the jiu-jitsu grandma. She's like 66 or something. You know, I will very likely be, I have to change my name to jiu-jitsu grandfather somewhere down the line, I'm sure. So, I mean, I'm in the last episode, we had two professors on, right? At Professor Lucas, my professor, and then another professor in our school. And, you know, among the professors, they're talking about like what it feels like to be at that point of the game, but still recognize that there's so much more to learn, which is both interesting and daunting. As you moved into becoming out of the beginner stage and into where you were perceived as more expert, you know, you move from being fewer and fewer students in your school have the experience you have. What changed in the way you thought about jiu-jitsu as, and I don't know, and maybe you can describe when the breakpoint was. Was it as you got to your purple belt, or maybe not till you had several stripes on your, when did you feel that transition to being as much a teacher to the other students as you were a student to the professor in the school?
Yeah, it was probably at purple belt, because I can remember my own experience. Like I showed up at the school and I rolled with a 3-stripe purple belt. He's got a black belt now. His name is Aaron Ulsher. And he teaches at Studio 540 here in San Diego now. And I can remember rolling with him and just thinking to myself, so purple belt, 3 stripes, and you're invincible. Like, that's incredible. You know what I mean? Like, I just had no kind of solution or answer to, you know, to get anywhere into making that guy feel like he was in danger. And I think, you know, if you've been doing jiu-jitsu for a little bit, you probably like, and you're in the white to blue belt range, you're probably like, man, purple belt is like the real thing. And instead of you seeking out to coach people seek you out to coach them. And you start getting those questions and you start feeling like, oh, wow. You know, like I am really good at half guard, or my Kimura game is really tricky. And so people appreciate that and they want to know what I'm doing with it. So I think it was around that point. Yeah.
And it's like, psychologically, what did it change the way you thought about yourself? Like, was there a reinforcement of, hey, I didn't give up. I've persisted. I've learned. I'm better at jiu-jitsu. Did that have a corollary to you as a professional? Because given the age that you started, sort of like 26 to 40 is a very dramatic change professionally, right? You're 26 in most kind of business people's careers is still has much more in common to entry. But at 40, you have much more in common with, you know, the people who are, and maybe, you know, plenty of 40-year-olds are running their own companies. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just curious if that was a mutually reinforcing development, or were they separate in your head?
No, you know, I think, you know, when you make it to purple belt, you know, you've like that's a huge step from white to purple, is just a, you know, a monumental amount of time and effort and dedication to go from white to purple belt. And I know we're talking about this.
It's part of who you are, right? When you get your purple belt, sorry to interrupt you, but you know, like, you won't stop. You might going to take a break for whatever reason, but you won't stop.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you're coming back. And I have taken breaks. So like, the way I imagine it, or the way I see the journey in my mind, is like, there's this cohort that I started with, and you know, out of 10 of us, there's two of us left, right, you know, that are still going or have progressed to the point that we've progressed to. And you just kind of see those faces fade away into the background, you know, for whatever reason, they couldn't keep it going. They couldn't make it. And so there's a great deal of pride that comes along with that. You know what I mean? When that purple belt gets wrapped around your waist, you're like, wow, this isn't something that I just say I do anymore. You're right, Professor. It's like, this is a part of me. And yeah, you carry that pride with you. You know, I don't think very many people know, you know, like in all the various jobs that I've had,
right.
You know, my colleagues have said, oh, you do jiu-jitsu and you know, how long have you been doing it? You know, they don't really understand the commitment and the culture and the family and the team and things like that, that you develop out of it. But the few that do know are like, okay, you know, that's a serious accomplishment. You've shown some serious dedication to making that happen. I've gotten jobs because people are like, oh, you have a brown belt. Oh, so you've been training, you know, you've been brutalizing your body for 14 years. Like, yeah, you know, like I've stuck with it.
Did you have that employer in an arm bar? Did you have that employer in an arm bar? Were you negotiating your salary with him in a triangle?
No, but you know what? You guys can't see it here, but I have a poster on the wall that says Jiu-Jitsu Fighter. And we were doing a Zoom interview and he saw it. And look, that's just one example. Like I've met with presidents of schools and they're like, you know, I know Kenny Florian, you know, you know, you're a jiu-jitsu guy. And we start talking about it and, you know, it's fascinating, you know, even the people who aren't doing it, the admiration, you know, if you were a wrestler, if you did some other kind of combat sport, the respect and admiration that people have for jiu-jitsu. And, you know, it's established great rapport for me in a lot of situations.
So when you've had a big milestone, right? Like purple belt might be the thing that says jiu-jitsu is not a hobby. Jiu-jitsu is ingrained in who I am as a person. And, you know, I asked the professor about, you know, how it felt when he became a black belt. And that's, you know, in some ways it might be a bigger transition about how people see you versus, you know, is there some magic step that all of a sudden from brown belt to black belt happens? I mean, I think less so from a very beginner's perspective. I mean, the gradations between somebody 10 years in and 15 years in are more subtle than the person 1 year in and 4 years in or 5 years in. I mean, it's just the learning curve is so fast when or so stark as a beginner versus a person that's been around for a long time. However, I still think those milestones are important. So when you were given your brown belt, could you tell us a little bit about how that felt? Because I read, you know, you have a great article and Marty's easy to find and Martin Herrick on LinkedIn. And he has a very nicely thoughtfully written essay article about his jiu-jitsu life and his professional life and how those things are intertwined. Could you talk to us a little bit about how it felt to get that brown belt? And I'm curious, like, about the positive things that came with it. And then, you know, you talk a little bit about imposter syndrome and whatnot. If there was any of that going on at the same time, any anxiety that comes around. I got my blue belt, you know, at the beginning of the year, and the professor said, I wish there was a light blue belt. I wish I had. He says, light blue belt? he said, we only have 4 stripes on the white belt. Otherwise, we'd look for number 5. But, you know, as a beginner, that was a very prideful day for me, honestly, because even though I'm still very, very, very much in the camp of the very beginning person, it always feels good to feel like there's a step. But the brown belt's huge. I mean, that it puts you in a very, very small number of people who make it that far. So tell us a little bit about how that felt.
Yeah, well, first let me say, Pete, congratulations, man. in jiu-jitsu, I've never been to a school where a guy gets a blue belt without deserving it. So, you know, congratulations. And without going down, you know, that sidetrack, that's a huge accomplishment. You show up and you get a white belt. You have to work for a blue belt. You have to show dedication to get a blue belt. So that's amazing. definitely imposter syndrome when I got the brown belt. I had taken 6 years off of competing, and you know, it was because I transitioned from one school to another. I left a school. I bought a house in the East County in San Diego, and the school that I was going to is in a just driving, no traffic, is about a 40-minute drive away. If we add traffic, which is definitely going to be the case at the times that I would have to go, it'd be like an hour and a half drive. So I just couldn't continue there. And so I found Outliers and I transitioned over here. And, you know, that coach, professor, you know, at some point in some, in some other episode, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what you think about, you know, a purple belt transferring into your school and what you have to do to get comfortable with giving that guy a brown belt, because he didn't come up through your, you know, your lineage, your curriculum or anything like that. And I had taken 2 years off. So I was off for 2 years, then came back, felt like I'd lost all my jiu-jitsu, you know, had to relearn the team, had to learn my coach and, you know, kind of bring myself back. And it's crazy when you take time off like that, your game changes, like you find different, anyway. So yeah, when he wrapped that around my waist, it was like, you know, I can't look, like, I thought purple belt was like, you're untouchable. And now I'm wearing the brown belt. I've actually surpassed that place that was my mental benchmark when I first started jiu-jitsu. So an incredible, incredible accomplishment. Anxiety, because, you know, when people visit the school, they want to know what the brown belt's about. Sure. You know, the brown belt of this school, you know, you've got to really represent the best of what this school has to offer. And so I'm not going to say it feels like there's a target on your belt or on your back, but you know, there's a spotlight on you. You know what I mean? And someone comes in that's new, that's trying out the school, or that's just visiting from out of town, or you get those guys who just go on jiu-jitsu pilgrimages and they're trying schools and things like that. You know, when they want to roll, you know, they want to see what the brown belt's about, you know? So a whole nother level of dedication that you find yourself in mentally is you're like, I'm not going to be the brown belt that embarrasses, you know, the school. I'm not going to be the brown belt that, you know, doesn't have my game together, that gasses out. I'm not going to be that guy. And so there's, you know, there's all that extra, that weight and responsibility, but it feels fantastic. You know, like I called it anxiety, but it's an exciting position. If you like to be empowered that way, it's incredibly empowering to be in that role. Something I'm very proud of.
That's awesome. I couldn't agree more, Marty. I agree 100% of what you're saying. And first, as a student, I felt everything that you're saying. So if you were seeing when you were talking, I'm like laughing here in silence because. Yeah. That's what I think everyone that I talk feels the same, right? When you get to that point, because I think one of the reasons that imposter syndrome, we always try to compare ourselves with the others, right? Instead, measure our evolution with ourselves. So when you are a white belt and you see those purple belts that we're talking so much, those guys are gods, right? Like, how come? I can't understand what's happening. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. But then when you get to that level, you are as good or better than them, but you still have that psychological.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wall in between you two. Yeah. But if you remember you on the white belt, you are that god now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And going to different places, visiting and everything in a good way. People want to not test you, but like you said, you have the responsibility on carry the belt, right? Yeah. On like your behavior, on your technique, but your attitude and also being showing up for the challenge. That's what you learn in jiu-jitsu, right? You need to be comfortable in uncomfortable situations, and that maybe you were not on your best day on that day, but guess what? You need to show up for the challenge anyway, right?
Yeah, that's you brought up a really good point there. You know, when there's new guys and gals that are starting, you know, it's really the leadership of the senior belts that is what welcomes them in and keeps them there. You know, I always tell my professor, Jeremy Barton, that, you know, I want to keep any of our teammates from costing you membership money from people who come in and get bulldozed and are like, oh, I'm out of here. This is a bunch of, you know, these guys are a bunch of aggro guys. I don't want to train here. Like the purple belts and the brown belts have like this extra layer of, you have to police the other teammates. Like, hey, he's not ready for that. You know,
yes.
You don't need to be throwing, you know, shotgun grip arm bars on a brand new white belt. You know,
that's not enforcers.
Yeah. You gotta keep it, you know, keep it clean. Remember, this is a teammate. We want to be here. This is money that's going into your professor's, you know, bank account and helping him pay his bills. Like, you know, don't do that to the guy just because you can, doesn't mean that you should. So there's that extra level of responsibility they have at the school as well.
I feel very strongly about that, Marty. I mean, as a, you know, as somebody who's, if not the oldest person in the gym, you know, there may be one person who's got me by that couple of months. Like, it's just a different dynamic between me and a 22-year-old. But regardless.
Yeah, Peter's the booty of the 22-year-old. All the smash and pass cross face.
Yeah.
But he and I have, we've talked a lot about this, like the experience that a person has when they come in to the gym will have a huge impact, like the culture that they walk into. And is it a culture of respect? You know, is it a culture of teaching versus competition? Well, you know, there's a competitive element to jiu-jitsu. It's a sport and it's a martial art. I mean, they're without a doubt, but if the professor does an amazing job, and I have an incredibly generous group of students around me that are very patient and careful about teaching me, and I'm a slow learner. So like, I got to be shown things a million different times. And, you know, and our crew is very good about that. You know, we got, you know, this Coach Jim and Coach Brett and Coach Scott, we got a bunch of folks who really, really patient learners. And I think that creates a sense of community that is instructive in and of itself, which is that we're not just, you know, when we talk about developing the whole person, it's not just your internal development, but your development in terms of how do you treat another person? How do you approach somebody? The brown belt deserves respect. And any white belt who thinks, well, I'm a 20-year-old super strong person, you know, soon learns that, you know, 13 years of training.
Yep.
You're a different animal than you are, you know, in that. So it sounds like you've had a competitive experience too, that you've competed out there. And could you tell us a little bit about how we believe that everybody should try a competition? They should try joining it, and that the value in competing isn't whether or not you come away the winner of it, but the experience of everything preparing up to the competition and then the competition day itself. Could you talk to us a little bit about what competing has meant to you?
Oh man. Yeah. What a great topic. Well, one, just talking about brown belt most recently, you know, put the brown belt on me and I was like, oh man, do I really deserve this? Do I really deserve to be in this role? So I signed up for tournaments right away. You know, because I wanted, more than anything else, I wanted to prove to myself that on the mats in a competitive environment with other brown belts, that I belong there. And that did help. That did help quite a bit. So, so for anybody, you know, who's moving up through the rank system, and if your professor puts a belt around your waist and you feel the weight of it such that you're like, oh man, I don't know if I'm really ready to represent the school in this way. Sign up for a tournament, and win or lose, when you walk away from it, you're going to feel differently about yourself because they're just such great experiences for you and learning experiences. One of the things that I tell a lot of the students at the school, and I'll get to the direct answer to that question in a second,
that's
is
okay.
we train with each other every day. I know what you like to do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm preparing to stop that, you know, like, and you know what I like to do. And so you're preparing to stop me. When you go fight a guy you've never fought before, he's not, you know, unless you put a bunch of stuff up on YouTube and you have your Instagram or your Facebook that's open to the public and you're posting a bunch of videos on there. And I do know people who Google people for tournaments, but like they don't know your game. And so you get to really see if your game is effective in a tournament because there's no one there that's like, oh, you know, Marty likes the half guard and he likes to go to Kimura, or he likes the, you know, cross collar grip, you know, he likes baseball bat. Like, you're not, none of them are prepared for that. So right. like your smoke screens and things like that, they actually work. Okay. So there's that. As far as competing overall, I have a personal philosophy that you grow the most when you're uncomfortable. And I think that is a great, mm-hmm. you know, like that fits jujitsu wonderfully. Right. right? When I first started jujitsu, I did a couple of tournaments, and the anxiety that I felt going on tournament day was like nothing I'd ever experienced before. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do a bunch of these until I break through that wall. I never did. I never did. You know, like every time I'm in the bullpen when they're about to call me out onto the mats, I'm like, what were you thinking, buddy? Why did you do this?
Right.
Why would you put yourself in this situation? Look at all these people watching. My wife's here. She's going to see me get beat up by somebody. Why do I want to do that to myself? But then, man, you know, once he says go and, you know, you grab grips or you shoot for a takedown or something like that, that all goes away and the training kicks in, that anxiety just disappears and you're in the fight and you're problem solving and you're thinking about stuff. And then you walk away from the tournament and it is like night and day. You're just looking at it. Why was I so freaked out? That was such an incredible experience. Right. That was so good for me. I had so much fun, win or lose. I had such a great time. And so I really think that facing down that anxiety,
yes,
you know, that terrible feeling that you have is so important for you to do on a regular basis. Otherwise, it's going to crush you. It's going to stop you from living the life that you want to live in other aspects of your life. If you're going to let it control you in one instance, it's going to control you in others. And so that's why it's so important to force yourself into those situations.
Yeah,
and you never regret it. I mean, you just never regret it.
Without a doubt. I mean, because you have, you know, you have 13 years of having similar experiences. Do you have a competition that sticks out in your head? Is like if I ask you about your competitive life, that this one fight yeah. sticks out in your mind? What, tell us about that fight.
This guy's gonna be mad at me. he's such a good dude. He's such a good dude. I won't name any names, but he's gonna know. He's gonna listen to this and he's gonna know exactly what I'm talking about. The last tournament I did at Purple Belt before I took a 6-year break, it was here in San Diego. It was one of the Jiu Jitsu World Leagues. I took third place at that tournament. And the guy that beat me first, I mean, he just manhandled me, you know, it was my first fight. So maybe I wasn't mentally, you know, mm-hmm. warmed up yet. I don't want to make any excuses.
We know exactly what you're talking.
And so, you know, he pulls me in the guard. He's sweeping me all over the place. You know, I get back up and sweep him. He sweeps me again. You know, he's got me in spider all over the place. And he didn't submit me, but he was shooting all kinds of stuff. Like, I was just running away the whole fight, like, you know, just working my way out of submission attempts. And so I think he might have beat me, like, man, like 15-4 or something like that, you know, just a solid thumping. And then I came back and I won my next two fights, but because of the way the bracket was set up, I didn't get to fight the second place guy, you know how they do that. So, you know, since I lost first, I was the best I could ever do was third place in that tournament. For whatever reason, not associated with that tournament, I ended up taking 6 years off from competing, and got my brown belt, competed once, took third place, at my first brown belt tournament. The next one, I'm at the tournament. I'm there in the bullpen again, dealing with all the, you know, the negative dialogue, you know, having that.
Should be on the couch today.
Yeah. Like, I could be on the beach and be having a great time. Why am I here trying to get myself beat up? And he walks up, the guy that manhandled me, right? Like, he walks up and he's got a brown belt that's all beat up. And you're like, ah, great, you know, like, this guy won, he destroyed me, and look at that brown belt, you know what I mean? That brown belt's been through wars, you know, so he's been doing it, and he was super fit and in super great shape, and you know, so we got out there and we started, and I dominated him. You know, wow. I think I might have beat him this time like 12-5 or something like that. So it wasn't a full-on drubbing, but I was in control of it. You know, and like, I can remember in the fight, you know, I pulled him into half guard and I was playing like a De La Hiva game with him, and I was, you know, looking for some sweeps, but he was on it and he was smashing me, and I used some wrestle up stuff, you know, so when he tried to stand up, I was able to pick him up and take him down. I got some points off of that. He was shooting some, like, he went after like a guillotine on me, and you know, not to say that guillotines don't work, but like at brown belt, if you feel a guy going after a guillotine on you, he's either extraordinarily good at it, mm-hmm. or he's just looking for something. And so I was like, I feel like you're kind of desperate right now, you know, going after this guillotine on me. And I popped out of it very quickly and, you know, was passing him and was sweeping him and was working my game in control the whole time, wasn't gassing out, and won. And we got to talking afterwards, and I said, "Hey man, do you remember?" He goes, "Yes, I remember you." You know, like, and he had his coaches there, and he was like, "I beat this guy at purple belt." You know, he got me at brown belt.
He should do the spider guy on you again.
Yeah, you know, like, well, and that was part of my. So I didn't say that, but like I remembered his guard game was really good. So I was like, "I'm not going in there. Right. I'm pulling you into my guard." You know, that's where I'm going to be with you. And that had the effect I wanted. Like, you know, there was one sweep that I got him with that happened so quickly on him. He was like, "God," you know, he was yelling at himself. He's like, you know, like, "Damn it. You know, when I rolled him over on the sweep." And there's those things that are happening where you're like, "Oh, I'm really frustrating you. I'm really mm-hmm. getting in and controlling this." So that was a great, you know, that was the last tournament that I just did at brown belt. I think it was in March. So that was a really, really cool experience to go through that. And look, the jujitsu journey is like this, you know, mm-hmm. like we'll meet again and he might beat me again and then we'll go away, you know, right. come back and, you know, he'll probably get me in another one. And I might get him, but you know, it's just great. You're like, "Oh yeah, my game is improving. You know, I am growing as a practitioner. I, you know, like I'm getting better at this." So that was obviously, I love that one. And then probably if I'm going to call out another one, probably the first one, the first tournament I ever did at white belt. Like I said, I was kind of like, I thought I was, you know, a super fit guy and I thought I was going to really take to jiu-jitsu. So I signed up for tournaments very quickly. And very first fight at white belt, I think I had one or two stripes on my belt. I caught the guy with an armbar. And I was like, "I'm a prodigy, man. Like this is, I'm made for this," you know? And then I lost every fight after that. So anyway, but incredibly memorable because, you know, it's your first tournament. It's your sure. first time putting yourself into that headspace. First time I caught a submission at a tournament, you know, my very first tournament was, you know, so exciting to have that. Coach was super proud. You know, I remember my wife was there and he was like tapping her. He was like, "Do you see that?" You know, like, because he was so pumped for me. So yeah, that's, those are the two that probably stick out the most. And then the rest, just general advice about tournaments. And maybe this is just now that I'm 40 years old. Probably the first 7 years of competing, I used to really cut weight aggressively, right. Like 12, 15 pounds per tournament.
Wow.
And I found psychologically that because cutting weight was such a process for me, that was my goal. My goal wasn't to show up to the tournament and fight and win. My goal was to show up and make weight. Mm-hmm. And so all of my focus went into that. And then I wasn't really ready to fight because once I made weight, I was like, "I did it. I made it." Right. That was my goal. When my goal should have been win. My goal should have been like improve my jiu-jitsu so that I can win some of these fights.
Yes. I still want a medal when I make weight. So I think that I appreciate what you're saying.
So yeah,
I still want to
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, totally. No, I was just saying like that's a, you know, it's a big deal. Now I don't. Now I'm just, you know, whatever I put on my gi on when I step on the weight scale, whatever I'm weighing, I'm like, that's what I'm gonna compete at. I'm not
Yeah, I think that's why. Well, Professor, we're kind of coming up against our hour here. Anything you mm-hmm. want to ask before we kind of head towards the conclusion?
Actually, not much to ask. I just been hearing him and liking so much the day that we're having today. And I appreciate you so much to be sharing those stories with us. It's nice to see how well we, first time that we ever met, that we talk with each other.
Yeah.
And you can see that jujitsu bond, you know, you can relate it to ourselves so much. And the address, Peter, the address changed, the city, the team, the jujitsu school, but we are all under the jujitsu flag, and you'll see all the benefits coming from everywhere. So I'm really, really happy, really glad on what we're doing today. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, this was awesome, guys.
Yeah, Marty, listen, we're grateful that you took the time and the stories that you told. And I will tell you, talking to you, you know, that sense of calmness that comes with, you know, you get tested, people who have been tested are calmer than those who have no idea how they'll react in situations that might test them. And I feel like you carry that just as a person, you know, in the way you talk and the way you present yourself to us, you know, it's just a maturity that comes along with, you know, discipline. And, you know, and I'm of the mind that how you do anything is how you do everything. And so listening to your story about you've embraced the jiu-jitsu journey and that it kind of matched up with, I think, who you were as a person, and it amplified all these great qualities that you had, gave you a place to, you know, develop them more fully and perhaps even find some things that you didn't know you had inside you as well. So thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I think this is so great that you're doing this, and it's such a high quality production that you guys are doing. I love to talk jiu-jitsu, especially with people who love it as much as I do. And so I had a great time. As you can tell, I know I took up all the oxygen in this conversation mostly, but thank you so much for having me, guys.
We brought you in the talk, and if you talked too much, the professor would have threw on his triangle and tested your escaping skill.
My defense?
We would have tested your defense.
Probably not going for the triangle, though.
Professor, we've had people wondering how to find you. Are you willing to share your Instagram handle out there to have people come and look for where would you like people to find you on the social media world?
Instagram, I'm on Lucas Rubo, or you can put on LCS underline Rubo, and have pictures and we can talk over there. You guys can always welcome to come here and train a little bit of us. And come and check it out, that Peter is not that old guy that he said that he is. He's just going to smash everyone over the head.
Well, for those of you who are, you know, involved in your own jiu-jitsu journey, I think you got a chance to hear some really interesting perspective from somebody who's 13 years into the journey. And that's a long road, I think, in jiu-jitsu years. That's, you know, like talk about dog years being 7 years. That's like 80 years of training in other sports. And so I'm hopeful that if you're, you know, you've been with jiu-jitsu for a while, I think you heard some things, you use some vocabulary that might not be familiar to you unless you were in jiu-jitsu. And if you're someone who's been following our podcast trying to decide, hey, should I give this a shot? Should I not give this a shot? I hope you were encouraged by Marty's story, because it was important to him. And it's unlikely that he realized how important it was going to be in the first day on the mats. You know, he found out how it was important because he stuck with it and stuck with it and was, you know, had his competitions where he won, had his competitions where he lost. People came into the gym that were better than him. People came into the gym that he was better than. And, you know, he took away lots of different things throughout, you know, this long journey. So we hope that you take our advice that jiu-jitsu is in fact for everyone, and find a gym that's close by you and start your journey. And we'd love to hear your story if you you start. We do this in a format that we publish the audio in the podcast, which is where you're listening to it now. But I take some clips of the video and I put it at my Instagram, which is A Well-Run Life. And you know, I try to sneak some minute clips in there just to kind of highlight what we've talked about. So if you want to see those, you could come to that Instagram handle and check that out. So gentlemen, it was a great day. I appreciate, you know, both of your insight. And as a beginner on this journey, it's a pleasure always to get the perspective of you guys that have been hanging in there for years. And I'm looking to follow in your footsteps as best I can. So thanks for a great conversation.
Thanks so much, guys.